Welcome to Conversations in Care, the flagship radio program of the CARE Radio Network. The radio program dedicated to covering senior health topics, chronic conditions, and self-care. Using the simple act of conversation, we can create awareness, establish a course of action, and design a community of support. Conversations in Care was created from the many conversations throughout her 18-year involvement as a dementia practitioner, care advocate, and your host, Tammy Newman.
Good evening and welcome to Conversations in Care. I'm so glad to be back in the seat. I know that Tony did a wonderful job last week and kept all of you company while I headed to Toronto, Canada to present at the International Dementia Conference. So it was a great time to be there. It was an honor to be able to present, but I am really glad to be back doing the one thing that I truly love is doing this show. And we have a really great show today in which we're going to be talking to Mike Hollinger and the book that his wife put together and wrote, Through the Trials, Just Believe. But before that, I really do really want to honor the supporters that we have of the show and our title sponsor, especially the Point at Kilpatrick. They're a great supportive living facility in the Illinois area, and I'm so glad to have them on board as a supporter of Conversations in Care. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to our wonderful guest, Mike Hollinger. Mike, welcome to Conversations in Care.
Thank you, Tammy. It is a pleasure being here today. Thank you for inviting me to be here. And I want to say hello to everyone. I am looking so forward to sharing with you a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, as you could imagine, and at times draws out emotions. I'm feeling really good today. I'm confident I'll get through this, and I'm just so happy and glad I can be here to share with you.
Well, just know that myself and Tony are right here as you walk through this conversation about your wife. And that's one of the things that has always been something important to me, is that we start these conversations. We have these conversations to connect, to create these bonds, and to even really bridge, you know, connections. Oftentimes people are out there as caregivers or someone that loves someone that something horrible is going on with them, and they're able to really create these connections through conversation. So I'm really glad to have you on the show. And why don't we start there? The book that we're talking about is Through the Trials, Just Believe. And this is a book that was really, in the most part, written by your wife, but she really faced many, many challenges that she had to overcome. And maybe you can tell a little bit about the woman behind Through the Trials and Just Believe.
Yeah, I would love to. Tammy, she was remarkable. And you would have loved having her on your radio platform. She had a way of just brightening everybody's day and would always draw a smile on everyone. She was a beautiful, beautiful woman, a woman of courage, strength, and faith. And she faced her fears head on and would never give in to her fears. Her final trial, it wasn't her only trial, but final trial came December 2010 when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. It turned out to be, unfortunately, stage 4, very advanced. It was she had 40 to 50 tumors in her lungs, and it was also in her bones. And unfortunately, about a year later, not a year, 10 months, it went to her brain. And it was during this time that she wrote her book, Through the Trials, Just Believe, to offer hope and encouragement to others going through trials. Truly amazing lady, and she just kept giving through the whole journey. She was blessing people and through the journey, other lady cancer patients. She was making love boxes for them. And in fact, God impressed upon her who to give it to the first one, and he said you'd see a lady that day in a green hat. Sure enough, a lady in a green hat. She gives her this beautiful, you know, these nice decorative type boxes. You get a fabric place, fill them with nice things, and gave it to this lady, and the lady scowled at her. A month later, when she saw, yeah, you know, when we go through stuff like this, dark times, all kinds of emotions comes out. We can get angry, we can get bitter, we can even get angry with God. But a month later when Nitsa was there, the lady smiled. And that's the effect Nitsa always had on people, bringing the best out of them. And yes, she had many challenges, from bipolar disease, God healed her of that, class 4 TB in law school, cysts on her liver that God healed her again, and he even healed her of the cancer in her bones during breast cancer on her birthday when they were prepping her for brain surgery. Amazing lady. And also, just briefly, she had a hard upbringing. She was born in Spanish Harlem in poverty. And many experiences there, escape bullets, everything. And then God set her on a course. She was a very strong-willed, feisty child, got kicked out of kindergarten, told you can no longer attend any public school in the district. And they put her in a Catholic school. A nun figured her out. She mellowed out. But you know what? Amongst all that, she was so intelligent and brilliant and went on through the boarding school to the Ivy Leagues, to Dartmouth. And that's where we met. Actually, right after law school is when we met. Our story began, and we married, and she didn't practice law. She was a teacher, gifted teacher. And she stayed in our home when our boys were born and just gave them a remarkable education. And let me tell you what, when cancer came, she was a pillar of strength. This 5'3", beautiful, classy lady was a pillar of strength, and the legacy she left for to everybody. She was amazing. So that's a little bit about the lady that I was married to who wrote the book.
Well, you know, and I think you mentioned that she was strong-willed and all of the challenges that she faced. I think that was an important gift that she had, was her ability to be strong through some of these really amazing challenges. Now, why do you think she decided to really kind of share this really personal event in a very public way by writing a book?
That's a good question, you know, and she was the type of person that always wanted to help people. That's just a teaching gift, right? And early on in the cancer journey, she began talking about her desire to write a testimonial book. And she kept bringing it up to me, but she said, you know, I'm not sure how I'd put it together, it being small, as she put it, vignettes. And, well, God was instilling this desire in her. And God, knowing he didn't know how, he prompted a friend in another town about a four-hour drive from us. This friend did not know she was thinking of writing a book. She was in a bookstore. He prompted her to buy a book for her, a book a lady wrote on 9/11. And then she thought, why would Nietzsche want to read that? We've all heard a lot. We don't want to forget the event. It was very sad. But she said, no, I'm not going to buy it. And then she heard very loudly, buy the book. So she did, sent it to Nietzsche. Nietzsche was an avid reader, read the book. And that book was laid out the way she could lay her book out. And in the very back of the book, in bold, it said, just write the book. And she took that as God telling her, start writing. She did. It was so much a struggle with chemo, all the surgeries, and radiation. Then when her mental clarity began to decline, she lost use of her hands, but she continued. She'd use a speaking dragon program, and she just kept doing it. And, you know, she wrote her book, desiring for all to know how much God loves each one of us. And Nietzsche's testimony definitely attests to God's deep love for us and his promise to never leave us no matter what difficulties we face. And, you know, her life, Tammy, shows us that no matter how bad it may get, we can still remain at peace, full of joy, and not give in to fear. And Nietzsche wrote this in her book concerning fear. Fear may seem real, but it is not. It is a melee of thoughts, worries, and concerns that have not yet happened and may never happen.
You know, I think that's the funny thing about fear. There's so many things that we fear, you know, whether it's getting up and speaking in front of a group of people, or, you know, we fear that, you know, this horrible thing will happen or something else will happen. We definitely, a lot of us walk through fear and have those thoughts, but oftentimes fear doesn't really realize itself in the way that we manifest it within our own minds. But one of the things that I was wondering, because I think oftentimes so many authors write stories and sometimes write stories as a method of being cathartic even for themselves. Do you feel that was also something that she was doing to, you know, not only share a message with others, but really as a way for her to maybe share her message with you, your children, and then even maybe a way to heal herself through this journey?
You know, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about that, but, you know, I can tell you she left quite the gift, quite the legacy, and for us and for her boys. And it is a wonderful gift to leave her boys. And it also gave her a lot of focus during the cancer journey. I think it's very important to be focused on something that's bigger. I mean, cancer's pretty bad,
right,
but,
right.
You know, something that's bigger that you're doing. We've heard of people that say, okay, you're going to die. Well, never buy into the negative reports, never. You know, that's something that needs to stress. Buy only into the positive. But when we have something that out there that we're looking forward to or we're doing, it keeps us strong. It keeps us focused. And, you know, it keeps our mind out of the dark places that it doesn't need to be. So, you know, I think there, yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, Nita definitely left us a gift. Has me very busy now. And it's all wonderful. And definitely wonderful that what she did, leaving for her boys and how it helped her through also, yeah, and a gift to everybody.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, she was thinking beyond herself by giving you a new project, it seems like.
Yeah.
So there was a chapter at the very end of the this book. You added a chapter to the book. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what that chapter is.
You know, I was feeling impressed for a while to add a chapter. The Kirkus Review, it received 100% positive review. That was wonderful, a whole story behind that. And they noted how humble she was. See, she wasn't putting, I would ask her, are you going to put this in your book? She said, no. Are you going to put this in your book, referring to different healings and all? No, I'm only putting in the book what God wants. And they noted how humble she was and how she didn't over-dramatize. It's refreshing. Well, I'm the husband. I felt that I could boast on my wife. And so I wanted people to know more about this lady behind the book through the trials of disbelief, that she was definitely a woman of faith. Yes, she unfortunately didn't make it through this final trial of her life in the way we would like her to make it. But I wanted to just talk about her, and I did, and I just brought out just things about her, her strength, her different healings. I brought out events that happened in the end when there was a mental shift and God began preparing her to forever be with the Lord, brought that out. And so that was that revision. You know, then I added another revision in July, three revisions in a little over a year. I added a short, though touching epilogue, some very emotional moments I had. I had many, believe me. But I wanted to add these into the book, and I did that in July as an epilogue to the book.
Now, why don't you, because you kind of mentioned this real quickly, that she really kind of experienced this mental shift during some preparations for her in her passing. And maybe you can share some of those moments that you shared with her.
Okay, yeah, I'll share them. And, you know, real briefly, in going back just a little in her book, you know, God kept her strong until that point. She wrote this in her book. She was in Omaha getting ready for brain surgery. She was on her way to church with her cousin at the time having a discussion of the cancer journey. And she said, part of me felt tired and wanted to meet my Lord. The other part wanted to fight like a wild woman to stay alive for my husband and two boys. She states, I felt that I still had work left to do in the land of the living. I truly felt at peace with either outcome, but I decided to continue to fight. When they got to church, the first liturgical reading, much to her surprise, was of Paul's internal conflict in the Bible, whether it was better to live or die. He decided it was better to live and continue the good work. And Nita took it right then that God wanted her to continue the fight for life, which a verse he gave her early on was, I shall not die but live and declare the works of the Lord. And what she did through her book, and it was right when she finished writing the book, I often wondered what was going to happen, and her health went down really quickly. And it's really sad, but there was a shift, and God began putting this immense desire in her, giving her many dreams and visions of heaven, many dreams of angels. And here's one that happened with the angels. They came, and she could hear him talk, and she told me in the morning, and she could hear him say, she's too weak. We must carry her and take her to drink from the river of healing. And another amazing dream, she goes to heaven, and she sees her small home isn't ready, as she put it, and she heard a voice speak to her, and she said, I know it was Jesus. He said, it's okay, you can come live with me in my palace. And she turned and saw the most beautiful crystal palace, she said, that you could ever imagine. And she said she would have left right then if God would have taken her. And I would just conclude with this, that this is not the outcome Nita voluntarily would have chosen. She had two wonderful boys. She poured her life into them. But as she put in her book, she came to the place she no longer feared death. Not that she wanted to die, but she no longer was afraid to die. And she states in her book, I can't tell you how liberating it feels to not fear death. And it's the outcome we all must face.
Absolutely. Mike, I think what we're going to do now, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I really kind of want to talk to you a little bit further about what you were going through at the time as you were watching your wife as she was going through those stages and getting ready to pass away. And I'm looking forward to hearing what your thoughts were during that process as well.
Okay.
Just like mom is there to make you a bowl of soup when you're sick, Culinary Care is there when you're fighting cancer. The Chicago-based nonprofit organization delivers complimentary meals to ensure individuals fighting cancer don't have to worry about feeding themselves or their family. It's a simple mission with a profound impact. Learn more at culinarycare.org.
Residents feel at home at The Point at Kilpatrick. Our community provides seniors 65 and older the opportunity to maintain their independent lifestyle without the worries of taking care of their own home. Our all-inclusive package features fine dining, weekly housekeeping, laundry, support with daily living, and a host of activities. We invite you to tour our community at The Point at Kilpatrick in Crestwood, Illinois. Call 708-293-0010 to set up your personal tour today. A financial assistance program is available to those who qualify.
I really want to take a quick moment to, before we get back into this wonderful story with Mike Hollinger through the trials, Just Believe, I really kind of want to mention and thank our title sponsor, The Point at Kilpatrick. Without them, Conversations in Care would not be on the air today. So I really want to thank them for supporting Conversations in Care. Now, if you're just joining us, I have a wonderful guest by the name of Mike Hollinger, and he is telling us about a book that his wife wrote during her trials with a diagnosis of cancer. And when we left, we had just talked about some of the things that she was experiencing and how she was preparing for her passing. Now, Mike, one of the things that I wanted to find out from you is that as she was preparing herself to go on and pass over to heaven, what were you feeling and going through, and how are you dealing with all of this?
I can tell you it was an emotional roller coaster the entire journey for me. There's a whole story starting a year and a half before how God prepared me, telling me what was coming, if you can believe that. It was so hard. And I know he did that so I'd be strong for my two boys and help prepare them without eroding their faith. But, you know, when we marry the one we love, and it's supposed to be for life, you know. And it's so hard watching the decline. And also how intelligent she was and watching what she was going through. And yet, as I'm watching all this, it so amazed me. I mean, I was amazed at how spiritually strong she was and all the people she just kept positively influencing and blessing during her entire illness. There would be a song that would come on. I remember a worship song. I think it was Bless the Lord. With all the strength she had, she would raise her arm and worship Jesus. And when she got to where she was in that hospital bed, I took care of her to the very end in our home. And she couldn't even raise her arm. She'd raise her fingers and worship Jesus. And I would often think that this must have been like it was in the Bible when the disciples went on to be with Jesus. And, you know, there was a memorable event. She passed away on a Friday, and the Sunday prior, she slipped into a coma. And I just remember that Sunday evening. She looked into my eyes for the longest time. And I told her I loved her and spoke to her for a minute. She couldn't speak. She looked at her boys and sister, and then she went to sleep and never opened her eyes again. And that broke my heart, not knowing it was the last time. That was such an emotional, difficult time that I'd never look into her lovely eyes again. And it was so hard on me. And you know, we came through it, though. Many emotions I could go through many. And right now, it's been a slow healing for me. Because I've been so busy with the book, taking care of my wife to the end and doing the book. Oh, my goodness, it's a lot of work getting the book ready to go. And then all the marketing and now everything I'm doing centered around the book and many other things. And so my healing has come slowly, but it is there. It's coming, you know. God, I wouldn't want to go through this without him. I thank him for he's there. He walked with us the entire journey. And he's still walking with the boys and I now, and I would not want it any other way. God is so real, you know, and as she put in her book, God is real. He listens to our thoughts and our words. Trust him. He only wants to love you.
You know, to me, I really feel that the gift that she gave you was this book, because I think sometimes watching someone that we love so much pass away is very difficult. And I think sometimes the healing process is very, extremely difficult. I myself lost my mother just a few months ago. And I think sometimes we're given certain gifts that we don't know what to do with or why they're given to us. And I think this might be a wonderful example that she really kind of prepared of maybe kind of a cushioning for you to really kind of have your, you know, some of the things that you do right now be wrapped around this book. And maybe it was her way of really helping you through the grieving process. And I think that's kind of a really beautiful thing to really see in regards to how she prepared maybe you for her passing as well.
Yes, indeed.
Now, I'm curious, what about your boys? Tell me about your boys. How has this affected them, and how are they doing now?
The boys are doing very well. My oldest son, he is in his second year of college, and he's just like his mom. Oh, he's excelling. You know, believe it or not, when his mom was dying in our home, he graduated valedictorian of his high school class, gave an amazing speech, and while his mom, they had a laptop set up for her, I don't know how much she was able to hear, tremendous speech. He had a real tough time deciding where to go to college. I mean, he had a lot of in-state money if he stayed here, but I knew he needed to go where he's at. I didn't impress it upon him. I wanted to be him. Oh, there's a beautiful story how God gave him the peace where to go. He's now excelling. He's in his second year, and he's a resident advisor this year, free room and board. What a blessing. And, you know, something might... Yeah, it's truly a blessing. He's in Montana State University at Bozeman, by the way. And, you know, he said this about 5 months after his mom's passing. You know, Dad, we had it really bad. But when you look around the world and you see how badly everybody has it, we're really doing okay and we're really blessed. Oh, that makes a father proud that he came through it that well. My youngest son has it the toughest. My job takes me out of town. He's a senior in high school. He has to be very independent, take care of himself. Thank the Lord he's a good son. He doesn't get into trouble because he's alone a little bit, you know, unfortunately. And he's very creative, very, very bright and smart. He's not sure what his dreams are yet after high school, and that's not unusual for teens. But he's going to figure it out, and I know he's going to do very, very well. And, so they're doing well. And, you know, something I've always told them is to never let go of your memories. Always hold on to your memories, memories of your mom, everything she did, you did with her homeschool. But don't live in the past with your memories. Keep them with you in the present and look to the future because life will and must go on. And you know what? It appears they're doing very well at that.
That, you know what? That's wonderful. I know that that can be very difficult on children losing a parent so young. And, you know, it sounds like they have some great support in you. And, you know, they're really starting to strike out on their own. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I know that Tony said that he has a question for you. So I'm going to bring Tony on so that he can ask a couple questions of you as well. Tony?
Okay.
Hey, Mike. I mean, it's throughout the book and also, you know, all throughout your interview. You know, obviously you have a very strong faith, and your wife did as well. And, you know, when you're coming to terms with and coping with, as a caregiver, a death and dying situation, as you said earlier, you know, a lot of folks get mad at God or lose faith. Can you talk to the listeners a little bit about, you know, other than, you know, it sounded like you prayed quite a bit together and that was helpful as well, but can you talk about some of the other support you may have had through your church community and how that kind of logistically helped you guys and your family get through this crisis?
Oh, yes, we had support nationwide. It was truly remarkable. Family from Florida to D.C. to Iowa to Alaska. She lived in Iowa with her cousin for 4 months. The first day she received her chemo infusion, 4.5 hour or 3.5 hour drive to the hospital, and who's there receiving his first chemo? Her pastor. He walked through this the entire journey with her. The whole church body was there strengthening, supporting her. In fact, we just ended up going to the certain church. We didn't know why. Well, it was for the cancer journey because they just support her. And it was multiple church bodies. There was even a Catholic church. We're not Catholic, but there was Catholic churches in Puerto Rico that held masses for her. It was everywhere, the support. And even the Dartmouth graduating class of 86, they have a Compassio committee, 100 members. oh, they blessed us. In fact, one of the gentlemen did all the editing for the book, but they blessed me. So they made her hand-knit hats and afghans, and they raised thousands of dollars for our boys' scholars, for their colleges, and I could just go on and on. We had support everywhere, and it's so important to not only have support, but when we go through hard times, see, some of us like to do things ourself, but it's important we accept the support and the help. Because trials like this can be overwhelming, and they can really depress someone if we don't allow those who reach out to us and love us the most come alongside and support us and help us.
Yeah, that notion of acceptance of support, I think, is a really key message for people to hear. I'm glad you touched on that, because you know a lot of folks have support, but they just don't necessarily want to, you know, burden another family member with their illness or with their trials or their troubles, and they don't necessarily want to, you know, kind of be the center of attention either that their illness might make them as well. But, you know, and for those who don't have a large, you know, church support group or family structure, there's lots of support systems out there through nonprofit organizations too that they just have to be willing to accept that support in that help. Can you share, other than the, you know, it sounds like, you know, nationwide, churches were very generous with you. You know, can you talk about a time in which maybe you were so challenged and your faith was so strained to the point where, you know, you felt what some other caregivers who are listening right now might feel, that, you know, it's, you know, there's no hope and there's nobody there to support you and they're not accepting of that help. Can you recall a time in your journey in which you felt that way?
You know, it was difficult. Nitza, on the second occurrence in the brain, she had gamma knife, and that put her in a wheelchair for the last 16 months of her life, and that was extremely overwhelming. I work out of town, right? My company blessed me with 10 total months off the whole journey, all paid. Oh, unbelievable. But I kept trying to get back to work during the process, and I was gone for 2 weeks. And so when these challenges came, and every day was changing different. It was different every day. I'm good at figuring things out, and I figure out how we're going to get through this part, because now she can do this. Well, then the next day she couldn't use her arm or her leg, and I was continually being overwhelmed by this, you know, and really having to be patient. And sometimes that's hard, you know. I mean, we all have natural emotion, right? And it's important that we. And I was very positive and loved her and supported her, and I had to really watch myself because sometimes it would become overwhelming, and I'm trying to deal with that as we're facing the ever-changing challenges day to day. And then leaving the home, I had to hire a lady to be in the home. She was wonderful, but very burdensome for the family. Oh, but needs to face it with such grace, going always with a smile. And so, yeah, I had those times. I never gave up on God, and he's been too real to me that I never got angry at him, and I relied on him. But I definitely had those emotional lows through what we were going through, not just witnessing the one you love going through what she is, but also the challenge of having to continually think of the next step. I had never done anything like this before, you know. It wasn't like I was skilled and trained like a normal caregiver, so it was tough, yeah.
Yeah, that's another great point you just hit on, Mike, is that, you know, most folks who are thrust into the position of caregiving, you know, have no previous experience with that, and they're having to kind of deal with these things on the fly. I'm sure you can do research, but you know, there's no research to get prepare you for some of the loss that comes with brain cancer. And I'll share with you, my father's a brain cancer survivor, so I know a little bit about how that affects somebody's mental state as well as their ability to find words and things like that, which really I find amazing that she was able to continue to work on her book while, you know, suffering from brain cancer. That must have been extraordinarily extraordinary and even tiring for her, just on a minute-by-minute basis. Can you talk a little bit about her challenge in writing the book, despite the disabilities that come with a disease like brain cancer?
Yeah, you know, it was a challenge, like you said. You know, it got to the point that she couldn't use her arms anymore, her hands. But she was determined. She was not going to stop. There were seasons she didn't write, but she kept saying, I have to get my book done. I have to get it done. We ended up ordering a speaking dragging program. Oh, it put in so many wrong words. But, you know, she used that. She would speak, and it would type it out for her. And you're right, it was physically wearing on her with everything she had going from all the chemo and the multiple surgeries, two lung surgeries, brain surgery, brain radiation treatment, you know, and then all the chemo.
Yeah.
It was a challenge. Just maintaining this, I still am amazed at her determination. She didn't give up, you know, but that was like that strong will, like Tammy mentioned earlier, you know. I mean, Spanish Harlem, she was a fighter, you know, and she just kept fighting through everything. And you know what she always held on to is that process, just process. She always broke everything down into little chunks. Whatever she was doing, she didn't think of the whole big picture that would be overwhelming. She kept it small, and she always said, this too shall pass. Always knowing somebody has it worse, this too shall pass, and never gave in to the what-ifs or the why that erode one's faith and all that. I mean, she was very strong and challenged with the book, but she made it through it. Amazing lady. And the day she completed it, Tony, the day she completed it, she couldn't mentally process anymore, literally. It was that right to the wire.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just knowing what my dad went through, I mean, that feat is incredible, and, you know, I appreciate you sharing that story with us, Mike. I know that's very personal for you, and I appreciate you sharing that with us.
And thanks for the question.
Yeah, you know what, that's extremely amazing that she was able to get all of those thoughts that she had out into the book, and maybe you can share with us what you feel really sets this book apart from other inspirational books that are out there.
Well, one thing I know for certain, Tammy, is that at some point we're all going to experience some form of hardship in our lives. That's just part of life. And what I think helps to set this book apart is it offers great insight showing how we can face life's trials with joy, peace, and confidence, knowing that we're not alone in life's dark valleys. And also, her book is very real. It's a true-to-life story with a clear message of love and hope. A book that was definitely written from her heart. And even as we were talking, when cancer spread to Nita's brain and her thought process was declining, she still continued writing, offering hope and encouragement to everyone. And, you know, there was a day in the spring, briefly, we received the electronic cover final proof of her book, spring 2014. She had declined, wasn't responding, and I showed it to her. Says, Nita, did you ever think your book would be so beautiful? With no hesitation or confusion, she said, it's God's book. Give me no glory. Remember, he wanted it written. And I believe that says it all. It speaks of an incredible lady. She wasn't waving her banner. She just simply wanted people to know that we can go through anything in life with joy and a positive mental outlook, regardless of how bad things may appear.
You know, that's really remarkable, and we don't often hear those types of stories. So I'm really glad that she was able to finish this book in a really positive fashion. And Mike, we're unfortunately coming to that point in time where I need to start wrapping things up. But before I let you go, I was hoping that you could share some information with us. How can people get in touch with you? How can they learn more about the book, and where can they buy that?
Okay, well, the only place I am online is LinkedIn under Michael Hollander, and the whole site is, my profile page is built around the book because that's why I built it, for making contacts. So LinkedIn is my social media right now. The book has a wonderful website. I encourage anybody to visit. It's the name of the book, www.throughthetrialsjustbelieve.com. That takes you to the Ex Libris bookstore for purchasing, but there's a lot of nice information in there. It's also online at Amazon, and it's online at Barnes & Noble. And then we're in the process, and it should be done anytime. We're building a wonderful online 3D book. It'll have music playing when you're previewing, and it's in color, and you can hear the pages rustle as you turn the book. I mean, it's like you're seeing the book. And I'll give that domain address, though it's not done yet, but if anybody's interested, maybe in a week or two you type it in, it'll be live. And it's www.3djustbelieve.com.
Very nice. That's such a nice touch when books have, those electronic books have music with it, because it's just, I think it really sets the course for a really inspirational read. And Mike, I really want to thank you for taking time out of your day to spend with us here on Conversations in Care. And we will get all of that information up on our Facebook page so everyone can get to the book and also to the website as well.
And thank you for having me, Tammy. I appreciate it. And I just want to say goodbye to everyone, and the Lord bless you all.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you.
So we're going to go to a little commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined with Tony Fisher and the Fisher Report.
When you or your loved one are diagnosed with a terminal illness, you enter a time in your life that's more challenging than any you've faced. This season of life can be very confusing, frightening, and lonely. You find yourself dealing with strong emotions and may struggle between hope and fear, doubt and faith. At Peace Hospice and Palliative Care, we understand. We're passionate about our calling and help each individual live as fully as possible. Our aim is to be a caring and professional team that provides end-of-life care while preserving your dignity and enhancing the quality of your life. For more information on how Peace Hospice and Palliative Care can help, please call us at 630-649-7630 or visit us at peacehospice.net and start putting your mind at peace.
All seniors and caregivers have one thing in common. They all want to age well and enjoy a good quality of life. Fortunately, there are thousands of services available in the Chicagoland area to help you and your loved one maintain a high quality of life. The Seniors Blue Book is a free resource guide available at all Good Neighbor Pharmacy locations. The sole purpose of the Seniors Blue Book is to help guide and educate its readers about the myriad of services and organizations that are here to help seniors age well. The Seniors Blue Book lists over 50 categories of senior resources, senior housing, home health comparison grids, and editorials written by local professionals about issues like guardianship, reverse mortgage, and Cook, Will, and DuPage County aging services. Visit www.seniorsbluebook.com today.
Well, I want to thank all of you for listening in on Conversations in Care, and if you're just joining us, we just finished a segment with Mike Hollinger, who happens to be an author, with a book called Through the Trials, Just Believe. His wife wrote this book during her battle with breast cancer and brain cancer, and he is definitely on a tour to get the word out about this book. Now, we definitely have Tony Fisher here. Tony, how are you?
Hello, Tammy. How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome back from the cold north in Canada. I know that you probably had to take some survival gear with you, maybe a sleeping bag and a fur coat. I'm not sure what you ate when you were up there. I don't know if you hunted moose or if you had to scavenge for moss. But I'm glad you survived your trip to Toronto, and welcome back. And I'm glad the Canadian wilderness did not devour you.
Yes, the Canadian wilderness, I was able to bump into Tim Horton and, have a cup of coffee and, donuts. So that worked out in my favor, and, have some lager while I'm up there. So it was, and a lot of Canada Dry. Let me tell you, yeah. I love that I can walk into any place in Canada and get ginger ale.
Yeah, that's you're right. From where you're from, and that's a little more common here in Michigan. But from where you're from in great state of Illinois, they don't have just ginger ale just laying around. We love it here in Michigan, but it's more of a Canadian/Michigander type of thing.
It sure is. It sure is. It was fabulous. I could get a fountain ginger ale. It was awesome.
Hey, that's pretty sweet.
So, the Fisher Report, Tony Fisher.
Yeah, what I wanted to talk about, Tammy, was right back at you, was Dementia 2.0. And, I know that was a huge conference designed to talk about and help educate dementia practitioners and also educate you on some of the up-and-coming advances in dementia treatment as well as technology for that treatment. So my question to you is, what was your favorite part of the Dementia 2.0 conference, and how are some of those innovations going to positively affect the caregivers as that innovation and technology moves forward?
You know, it was a really, really interesting conference. There was a lot of scientists there, a lot of researchers there, sharing what they're learning about dementia. And, it was crazy to listen to what they would have to say sometimes, because they speak in a very different language than what we do. And I don't mean that as in, French versus English. I mean it definitely in regards to, a data dump of information and what they're learning in regards to dementia and Alzheimer's. So it was very interesting, because it was part research and then it was part innovations or things that we could do to work with someone that has dementia. So it was really interesting, and I think one of the things that let me start here. I'm going to start with what I found to be my favorite part of the conference, and then I'm going to talk about something else. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, I'm taking up your segment. I hope you don't mind.
No, not at all. No, I think it's important that, just a quick aside, even just as much as early as a couple years ago, these types of conferences were kind of really unheard of, and if they were going on, not many people were paying attention.
Right.
But now, with as people are getting older, and as the baby boomers are more and more of them are becoming victims of dementia or Alzheimer's, whether that be Alzheimer's type or other types of dementia, it's a major concern for the healthcare system. And these conferences really go a long way to educating providers and caregivers on how to cope with and deal with and treat dementia.
You make some really, really, really interesting points there.
Don't I always, though?
You do.
I mean, you say that like you're shocked or surprised. It's always very interesting.
On occasion, I am shocked and surprised, but...
Nice.
I think one of the things that was really eye-opening to me, there was a researcher there that did some research, because I've been in this industry for well over 20 years, and you keep hearing, okay, Alzheimer's, dementia, there's no cure, and there still is today no cure. And, you keep wondering, why is there no cure? Why is there a cure for, things that we can do for breast cancer. We can cure breast cancer or fight it, all those different words that you want to use for getting into remission for cancer. Mm-hmm. And you keep wondering, why aren't these things happening when it comes to dementia? And there was a woman that did her presentation, and what she talked about I thought was so intriguing, because she talked about the fact that the type of dementia, so most of the research is done on animals. So it's usually done on mice or rats in regards to the research for dementia. What I found very interesting is what they're finding through this research that this woman did is that the type of dementia that a mouse has or a rat has is not the same type of dementia that a person would have. So we're looking at Alzheimer's, and please don't ask me the scientific piece of this, because I don't know all the scientific pieces of this.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, us doing research on a mouse with Alzheimer's disease is not going to get us the answers that we need, because the Alzheimer's disease that we're battling or researching in a mouse is not the same as what's in a human. And I found that to be extremely intriguing, because we've been working for so long and using mice and rats as, you know, the test subjects. Now,
right.
Am I suggesting that we use humans? I'm not suggesting that. But, you know, I think if we're doing all this research and the research is curing and helping mice and rats, then we're not really getting to the point where we are going to be helping humans. So, you know, I think that that opens up a new line of thinking, and I think it's something that we need to really think about in regards to how that research moves forward. So,
yeah, this
to
just...
me... Go right ahead, Tony.
Okay, yeah, this is just an opinion question, Tammy, but I mean, you know, when you talk about, you know, comparing cancer research to Alzheimer's disease research, it's a situation, I think, to where folks who have cancer, you know, they're a lot of times they're younger and have some more life to live, or at least the perception of that, so they might be more apt to try, you know, clinical trials or experimental procedures and experimental drugs, where folks with Alzheimer's disease might not be able to voice that need and that concern for themselves. So do you think that, you know, their inability to kind of speak for themselves inhibits some of that those human trials that take place a lot with experimental cancer drugs and treatments?
You know, you're on a track of thinking that could take us in many different areas, and I think that's good. I think that's good for us to be questioning a lot of these things, and questioning them in various and differing ways.
Right.
And I do think that that could be a part of it, that they do not have the ability to say, yes, do this experimental trial on me, because they've lost their ability to reason. They've lost their ability to communicate, you know, and maybe that's something we need to start looking into, that, you know, not only when you're putting your will or your medical power of attorney together, maybe that's something we need to look at, that, you know, we also put in that medical power of attorney that, yes, I do want to be involved in human trials, you know.
Or maybe doctors on the front end of the Alzheimer's diagnosis when folks are first diagnosed, because it used to be like you didn't really realize you had Alzheimer's disease until you passed. But
yeah,
they're getting better at diagnosing it earlier now. Maybe doctors can, while folks have their faculties about them and can make decisions for themselves, you know, giving them some options and asking them if they'd like to participate in those options while they have the ability to decide for themselves.
Absolutely. I think that that's another piece to, you know, a lot of people say, you know, why should I get an early diagnosis? Why, you know, I'm going to lose my mind anyway. And I think that right there really speaks volumes to why, you know, often we talk, you know, the importance of getting that diagnosis early is to make sure that you put those things in place that you want to, you know, make sure that your family knows, all that kind of stuff. But I think this speaks volumes to really, you know, the greater good of society and being able to, you know, say, yeah, I really want to be, you know, I really want to be a part of this for as long as I can. And I think those are some things that we need to really look at in relationship to research and things of that nature, you know, in how we approach it and how we're going to do this differently if we want to find the cure, you know. And I think also, you know, sometimes there's more money given to cancer diagnoses rather than, you know, something that has to do with a perceived thought of it's only helping people that are older, which is not necessarily true. As you know, people can get diagnosed with dementia as young as in their 40s. So
yeah, absolutely.
The perception is that it's the old person disease, you know, and that's frustrating to me. And, you know, maybe that's another thing that we really need to look at and discuss and talk about, because I think the more that we talk about these things, the more likely we're going to be headed towards the right way for a diagnosis. So, and I think that leads me to the other piece that I found very interesting is that, you know, with conversation, as I feel that I talk about often, is that conversation is hopefully the way that we can bridge gaps. And mm-hmm. I feel that in regards to dementia and, well, actually anything, I think sometimes, like I mentioned in the beginning, the researchers and the scientists, they speak a different language. They have a really tough time helping me to understand what they're talking about. They dump a lot of data. They know a lot of stuff. They know a lot of big words. They can do a lot of stuff, and they're super smart, right?
Right.
But I think for us to be successful in all of this is bridging that gap with caregivers, with people with dementia, and really bridging that gap with all of them to find the cure. And then additionally, the other thing is that I think the scientists really need to talk to each other as much as possible, because I think there's things that can maybe connect with each other, and maybe they're not doing that. So that's just my opinion. Please don't, rake me over the coals, anybody, but that's where my opinion is in regards to this. So it was really, really interesting to be there over the 3 days we were there for the conference.
Yeah, it sounds like it was. And, thanks for sharing that with the listeners, because I know that, a lot of times folks who might be coping with someone that has dementia at home, coping with the illness and how it affects your family, may feel like we mentioned before, like other diseases like cancer and all, those other types of diseases get all the attention. And there are innovations and discussions and research going on in Alzheimer's, and hopefully that can give some people some hope. If they've been just diagnosed, if they can kind of tune into some of this stuff, maybe they can hear about some of these new innovations and get involved in some of the testing, and maybe it'll be successful for them.
I think you're correct in that. I think that's an important thing that we need to really start sharing this more and really getting more people involved as much as we can.
Yep. Hey, and I know we're getting close to the end, so before you go through your end spiel here, I wanted to make sure I let the listeners know that there's a number of ways you can connect with the show. One of them is through our Facebook page, Conversations in Care on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, just go to that little search bar, type in Conversations in Care. It comes right up. You can go there, like the page, and then you can get involved in the ongoing conversation, interactions with, and more information about our guests, our authors, links to their books, as well as interesting news stories you might find shareable on your Facebook page. Also, you can interact with us on Twitter, at Care Radio on Twitter, as well as you can also send us a tweet with the hashtag CIC Live. We'll get that and respond to you, and we'd like to interact with our listeners, and we hope that you take advantage of that as well. And I know, Tammy, that you are, have been working on a new and improved website. Is that close to launch for us on Conversations in Care?
It is close to launch. I'm hoping to be able to have that website out at the beginning of the next week. And additionally, there's newsletters that will be going out weekly that will share with you who we're having on the show this week and how to connect with us and any other little tidbits and information about some of the sponsors that we have on the show as well. So look for those. There was one that went out earlier today. And then if you're interested in really connecting with us, make sure to sign up for that newsletter. There's definitely a way, if you go to the website, you can sign up there. And then also, if you go to our Facebook page, there's a little place there. I think there, if you look, there's an envelope with a rainbow. And if you mm-hmm. click on that, you'll be able to sign up for our newsletter there as well. And that way you can stay in the loop with everything that's going on with Conversations in Care.
Yeah, I encourage folks to do that because that was a great thing that got sent out today, and I know people, if they like the show's content, they'll like getting that in their inbox. And, you know, just so everyone knows, if you've missed the show or you're tuning in just now and you're like, darn it, I missed the show, and, all the great things that Tony, Tammy, and Mike Hollinger were talking about, you can always catch the show on Blog Talk Radio. It's in the archives there. The last week's show was also posted on Facebook after the show as well. So just, you didn't miss it. Just click on that link and you can check out the archived version of the show and be able to interact with us later on that. We'd love for you to do that.
Absolutely. And hopefully by next week when the new and improved website comes up, you'll be able to catch all of those shows right there on that website. So I'm excited to be able to share that with all of you.
Awesome. Nice work.
Nice work for you too, Mr. Fisher. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad that you were able to take over the show for me last week. So thank you so much.
Hey, that was my pleasure, and I hope I get to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Conversations in Care. Next week, we have Donna Jackson. Donna Jackson is going to be talking about autoimmune disease and women. And the week after that is Margot Rose. And she's going to be talking about body grief awareness. It's a really great and interesting topic. And she really kind of helps us to understand how to work through grief. So it'll be a great show for us then. Also, just for those of you that are in the Chicagoland area, Aging 2.0 in the Chicagoland area is having a pitch event, hashtag 30 in 30 in 30. So we're having innovators in the aging space pitch their ideas on September 24th at 6 o'clock p.m. in Chicago on 3800 North California Street, and that is at St. Paul's House. So we definitely would love for you to come and check this out. You can find more information if you go to Conversations in Care's Facebook page, and that's the information that Tony shared with you earlier. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, and be well.